The Rundown, Part 7, A Far Lost Story by John Miro.
Twilight fell upon the darkening road. I found myself again alone. Streetlights went out by one, by two, by three. Now reveled in the shadows that had grown. Yes, I reveled in the darkness I'd known.
Citizens, muttered Bennett Underwood as he stared into the hollow floating above his desk. Studying his image mirrored in the field, he methodically constructed the overlapping Eldridge knot on his black silk tie. Today, we take a step towards greater peace and prosperity, and we take that step with our new friends from the South. He pulled his fingers away with a flourish, craning his head to the figure slumped in the chair between his desk and the center of the room. Martin Latticer's eyes were invisible behind his glasses at this angle, and he gave every appearance of having fallen asleep. Bennett knew better, though. Sure enough, the man's chin rose and fell in a curt nod. Resplendent. Bennett tisked at his bodyguard and majordomo. Well, perhaps it's a bit ostentatious, but it's a momentous event, and the voters expect a bit of show. He turned back to the mirroring hollow field, enjoying the precision and style of the knot, and brought his fingers back up to smooth the lapels of his otherwise understated, classic black suit. The millimeters of hair above his ears and round the back of his otherwise bald scalp were freshly trimmed, the black suit crisply pressed. In every way he appeared the model of respectability, trustfulness, wisdom. That was how he wanted to appear, Bennett thought to himself with a sardonic grin. In reality, he sought only one out of those three. Like all of you, I remain proud of our independence, but Far Lost is ever-changing, and yesterday's enemies must become today's... He waved his hand through the hollow, and it evaporated. Too heavy-handed, Bennett mused, his eyes leaving the windows and the splendor beyond to glance back. More typically for Martin, this time the man said nothing, just remained slouched in his favorite chair, the one halfway between the empty center of the room and Bennett's desk. He liked to perch there and scare the hell out of whoever came, pleading for this resource or that. Martin wore a similar suit and tie, in the only color he ever wore, silver, but while it appeared of good quality, it didn't appear custom fit. That, like Martin's slouch and carefully cultivated disinterest, was illusion. The suit was in fact very precisely custom fit. But Manta armor and System Guard counter-offensive weaponry built into the fabric of a suit was never going to pop. Likewise, the reflective glare of Martin's glasses was another illusion. He may not have perfected the social niceties, but it wasn't a desire to be left alone that spurred him to shield his eyes. Like the suit, his glasses were home to a top-of-the-line heads-up display, responsive to the slightest whisper or motion. Most times Martin seemed sullen or distant, he was more likely viewing a remote camera, triple-checking his employer's security detail, or reviewing Underwood Industries' massive employee database. Always on the lookout for a traitor, our Martin. Martin oversaw every operation in Bennett's empire, and had done so since the day the Civil War had ended all those decades ago. Yes, Counselor Bennett Underwood thought with a shrug, both men were much more than they wanted to appear, and much older than they let themselves look. He looked back to the floor-to-ceiling windows which completely encircled his office, and looked down over his city. There were a few things he treasured in life. Appreciate things too often, and they became habits. Habits lead to predictability. Predictability was a weakness to be exploited. He should know. He exploited the weakness of others every day. Still, he took a moment every day to survey Locklaw from the very tip of this, the highest tower in the city. It was worth it, for what little risk it brought. It reminded him of where he came from, and why he fought. What use were all the money and power in the world if he lost that? Bennett Underwood loved this city. In his youth, he'd gone to war for it. All his life, He'd fought others who wanted to grind Locklaw down to slake their own petty desires. He'd bested fools who didn't know what to do with the power that came with control of a city. Now, so many hopes and dreams were close to fruition. "Soon, Martin," he sighed. His man coughed. Bennett sighed, still not quite able to tear away from the view, but he nodded. A moment later, he felt the subtle vibration in the floor indicating that Martin had summoned the lift. Martin's silence spoke loudly to Bennett. "Yes, there's a risk in moving quickly, but what an opportunity!" Bennett clasped his hands behind his back, marveling at how quickly it had all come together. It had taken months of maneuvering to position the other city councillors, even that stupid blimp Cree, to the point where they'd be open to the new political reality Bennett was selling. Then Bayman had called ahead to offer the universally reviled mass murderer Roland Byrd up on a silver platter. Well, Bennett couldn't have hoped for anything more perfect. "You know there are precious few ways to look good in politics, Martin. Especially in this, lifting the trade embargo with Haven SG, it would have been unthinkable even a year ago. Even inviting the system guard to set foot in Locklaw would have cost me precious political capital, but now that their arrival is tied to punishing a monster like Byrd." The telltale hiss of the elevator's arrival finally pulled his mind from checking and rechecking his plan. He pursed his lips. It wasn't like him to overthink. Everybody likes to see a monster get what's coming to them. Still, he knew what had Martin so quiet. It wasn't like Bennett to put quite so much on the line for any one of his schemes. "The SG is coming, Martin. It's just a matter of time. If I can get them ready to spend their way in, not bomb their way in, we can hold this city. If I can make Locklaw see their way to forgiving and forgetting the system guard." He sighed. Goodness gracious, he was in a strange mood. He asked himself, honestly, what could change the course of his plans? What would he allow to happen that was better than what he was working towards? He turned to see the large glass and metal elevator rising out of the floor, its transparent doors already sliding apart, and Martin waiting beside it. "No, this is for the best," he mused, letting his eyes pass by elevator and manservant, turning his head to survey all the city sprawled around him. "We must align closer with the system guard. If we're working with them, they'll turn their efforts to pacifying the other cities long before Locklaw." Decades ago, he'd fought alongside cannon fodder from all the cities. He despised the system guard for forcing his hand against them, but no, that wouldn't stop him from doing it. Locklaw and Bennett Underwood must come first. "They're tightening the noose, Martin, and I don't see anything coming along to give the rest of us breathing room," he chuckled. "Unless there's, another arrival." He outright laughed for even voicing something so unlikely. "Another ship exploding into Farlost, to be devoured by a thorn, or perhaps scooped out of its grasp? A fresh injection of new knowledge, new technology. A new ship's complement to unpredictably tilt the balance of power?" "No," Bennett thought coldly, "I would never wish for that." He crossed to the elevator, two fingers sliding over the elegant interwoven knot about his neck. It was a nervous gesture, and he knew it, but he gave in to the impulse. "If I can set the pace, nudge them into buying their way into Locklaw through my companies, my mining fleets, I stay in power, my businesses prosper, and perhaps I can even keep the city from burning again." "Yes, sir," Martin agreed in his almost monotone. Bennett smiled. Ever loyal was Martin. "It's a beautiful day for a press conference," Bennett announced. "The first step to Underwood Industries milking system guard contracts. That will put paid to all that little shit Cree's schemings." Gods, but Bennett hated that manta and the eternal supply of hot air he spewed forth while he floated high and mighty in the council chamber. Martin's emotionless face moved, just a slight turn, but to Bennett's accustomed eye it conveyed puzzlement. It was unlike him to give so much away, Bennett thought, and wondered if he'd done it to cover for his employer's own uncharacteristic reflection. You paid Bayman well, on top of the information he requested to deliver Bird to you. You like him, don't you, sir? Psh, no one likes Bayman Martin. He's arrogant, rude, has a complete lack of respect for his betters, but he is an honorable man. It's a weakness, Martin said, agreeing with his employer's unspoken sentiment as Bennett reached him at the elevator. Yes, it is. An admirable weakness, but still a weakness. Why did you give him such valuable data? You don't think he'll actually survive, do you? Oh, I doubt it, Underwood muttered. Bayman holds his talents in too high regard. If anyone was to go through on this quest, though, I'd bet on him. And if he does come out of the belt alive, he'll honor his debt and repay what I gave him tenfold. The sardonic grin returned. And let's be honest, I've no intention of funding an expedition into the winter belt, searching for... Martin's shoulders tightened, and his fingers raised to almost touch the black horn rims of his glasses. A faraway look glazed over his face. Then his jaw clenched. The police ship bringing in Roland Byrd is under attack. Bennett's eyes widened. He stormed across to his desk, slashing the air to raise a hollow. Police headquarters, duty officer! The chittering claws of a nervous Skanen appeared in the hollow. What's happening? Bennett barked. Counselor, a hijacked cargo ship has opened fire on the inspectors returning from orbit with Roland Byrd. Damn it! Bennett slammed a fist down on his wooden desk. What's going on up there? Are the inspectors alive? How long before backup arrives? The inspector's ship was shot down, sir. We're having trouble reading life signs from inside the ship. The pier was evacuated. A Class 6 storm is kicking up. First response is still 4 minutes out. Keep Mr. Lattiser informed. Bennett backed up from his desk, willing his fist to open. He nodded, and Martin killed the connection with the twitch of a finger. Roland Byrd was escaping. Officers had been fired upon, perhaps killed. He looked out the window. The pier was hidden from view, of course, down behind the wall that encircled Locklaw. He feasted on the crystal-clear view of the city below him once again, and the monstrous crushing depths of Casti's atmosphere below and beyond. His city. He closed his eyes and breathed deep, and the outburst was done. Only the flaring of his nostrils revealed the depths of Underwood's anger. Crashing ships? Damage to the pier? They were supposed to wait until the police landed, kill Inspector Usher and free Roland Byrd quietly. He stared at his man. This is a problem, Martin. You have been listening to The Rundown, a far lost story, written by John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Opening music, Everything Is Not What It Appears, kindly provided by Nate Maingard at natemaingard.com. Closing music, Full On by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com. If you like what you hear, you can become a patron and support more stories at patreon.com/servingworlds. Thanks for listening. See you next week.